Okay, I've got 901. We'll call this special meeting of the Coryell County Commissioners Court to order at this time. Noting that all members of the court are present. For those of you that are here in person, if you've got an electronic device, we'd ask that you place it on silence at this time. And for those of you that are participating by Zoom, we would ask that you place your device on mute until such time that you'd need to address the court. We'll begin with a word of prayer. Our most gracious Heavenly Father, we come before you humbled in your sight today and asking for the forgiveness of our sins. Lord, we ask that you continue to bless us. And Lord, most specifically, we ask that you would bless us and grace us with the rains that are much needed in this area. Lord, you know more than what we could possibly ask for, that what we need. So we would ask that you look into your heart and deliver us with what you believe that we need. Lord, we ask that you place your hand of guidance and wisdom on this court as we do the good work here for the citizens of Coryell County that would honor you in heaven. We ask all these things in your son's holy name. Amen.
Amen.
And the pledge to our flags. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. The next item on our agenda is the public forum. Citizens may address the court on any matter other than matters concerning county personnel or matters under litigation. Each citizen will be allocated 5 minutes with a total time not to exceed 30 minutes. Is there anyone here in person that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone that is participating by Zoom that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, we'll move on to the I would ask the court's indulgence and kind of work a little flexibility to this. I'd like to pick up action item number one, which is consider actions necessary to procure grant administrative services for the Community Development Block Grant Mitigation, CDBG MIT. And I apologize for the typo on the agenda. In our last phone conversation with the GLO, it was GLO's recommendation that we basically start over with the procurement process with CDBG MIT. Not that we're going to be penalized in any way. Those funds are still dedicated to Coryell County. As you recall, those come from the flood events of 2015 and 2016, and which the CITCOG was the delivery mechanism. Those go through the COG. There was approximately $6.8 million in funding that was available to the CITCOG region, which was then agreed upon to be split between Coryell County and Milam County, which were the only two counties which were eligible for funding under those disaster declarations. So in talking with Mr. Belt and, you know, the conversation with the GLO, we thought it was appropriate to move to re-procure administrative services for CDBG MIT, and we would reissue an RFP for those administrative services. Following the outline and the checklist that has been developed. So notice would, you know, pending your initiation for that, then we would start that process.
That's when we had begun RFP before.
Yes.
And we had how many?
We only had two respondents. It is currently, we're currently under contract with Langford Grant Services, or but Langford is, and we have talked with Langford. They understand I mean, this does happen from time to time. Brandon has talked with the GLO, and my conversation with him was that Langford would not be prohibited from reapplying. I mean, they would have to submit just like any other vendor, and we would still go through a grading and selection process, but they wouldn't be disqualified from submitting their proposal going forward.
That was from Brandon, or that was from the GLO?
Brandon had asked the GLO. So, I mean, I didn't, I'm telling you Brandon because I didn't directly talk to the GLO.
Right.
So that's the information that came back to me through Brandon.
The way I understood it is the GLO is our attorney, Mr. Bell, to create a memorandum that Langford would not have any inside information.
Good, because I had heard that they might have to exclude themselves.
That's what he had checked on. That's okay, correct. That what we will do is within this process, we will have a memo that goes in our file, so to speak, because there's nothing that we have done up to this point where Langford has really any tangible inside information that would give them an advantage over anyone else.
And the grading would be,
And so
the grading, clean slate.
Yeah, you start with a clean slate. That means that Langford would not get credit for the work, you know, that they've already done, but they wouldn't be penalized either. It's not we have to look at them as just a, you know, just any other, you know, vendor who's
submitting. Well, don't have many options because they're probably not going to be more than three that's going to
especially when we advertise.
Yeah, I mean, when you get the word out correct, it can kind of, you know, I'm not going to say it's a direct correlation, but to kind of tie the two together is we did do a better job in publicizing the hazard mitigation plan, and we got six respondents on that. We did a better job in advertising the community wildfire protection plan, and we had six or seven respondents on it. And if you recall, some of those were, I think one of those, it was even from like North Carolina. One of those, you know, so it is quite possible that there would be more respondents, you know, this round than just the two that we previously had.
I make a motion to have Mr. Bell create an RFP for the grant administrative services for the community development block grant.
Second.
We got a motion from Commissioner Matthews to develop an RFP for the CDBG MIT. And a second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on action item number one? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Thank you, gentlemen. We will pick up with workshop item A, which is review of budget request submissions by department and general budget workshop. Ms. Roebuck has put together folders. I've got all the requests that I've received up to this point. I will say, I inadvertently failed to contact the constables. I left them off my email. So I will email them today and request their budget requests. I believe maybe one of the constables has reached out to maybe some of y'all. I have not seen anything from any of the constables. But if you're concerned with why there may be an absence of any of those, that was my fault in not properly contacting them. So with that, I just wanted to run through. You've got the same stuff that I've got up to this point. And I do anticipate there would be a little bit more to come in. But first is, and I'm going out of the binder that Ms. Roebuck provided you. So we've got the road and bridge salary schedule, then the road and bridge line items that he has proposed, and some supporting documents to go along with that, ending with kind of his reseal and rehabilitation sheet being the last thing. JP4, I did add one little blurb, the video magistrate, you'll notice on there, and I had Judge Latham kind of initial off on that. That video magistrate cost applies to all of the JPs, and that's a program that we originally funded with CARES Act funds about 2-3 years ago, and so that contract is ending in this fiscal year, and it picks up with a monthly rate of $150 a month per JP.
Per JP?
Yes, that is per JP.
Okay.
So I didn't want to make notes on anybody's requests. So you're not going to see that annotated on the other two JPs, but Judge Latham just happened to be here. So I wanted to put that on there so you'd have that information. So then we've got JP3 and then JP1. And typically JP1 and JP2, there's match up, but I'll confirm with Judge Price on that. For the indigent health program, again, that is an amount, the overall budget is an amount that we have been carrying to meet state requirements for a number of years. And I don't think that amount has been adjusted. For as long as I'm aware of, they've always come in under budget, but we continue to use those matching funds because there's a formula that goes with that we're required to put into that program by the state. But in that, you'll see that Ms. Davidson has submitted a memo requesting one adjustment there. The county attorney and his proposed budget. And then right after that, you'll see the proposed prosecutor pay schedule. That prosecutor pay schedule is for both the district attorney's office as well as the county attorney's office. And that's how they are proposing to do that. And I'll address this right now. I believe that we can do that. I mean, this is reasonable, and I think it's achievable. But I also think we're going to have to be a little bit creative in how we fund it. And the reason I'm saying that is it goes back to Senate Bill 22. If y'all have not read Senate Bill 22, I encourage you to do so, because it addresses rural law enforcement as well as rural prosecutors' offices. At this point, I believe that the district attorney's office qualifies by itself for a rural prosecutor's office grant, and that's $275,000. The county attorney's office is also eligible for a rural prosecutor's office grant, and it is $275,000. The county as a whole is eligible for a law enforcement grant. And that grant for rural law enforcement is $500,000. As the bill reads right now, the comptroller's office is charged with coming up with the implementation of these grants. And they're not required to have that implementation ready until January of 2024. as the bill reads, you cannot use those grant funds to offset current taxpayer funding. So when I say we're going to be a little bit creative about trying to fund these proposed raises, if we were to use fee funds, like Fund 74, to offset the first quarter of the fiscal year, then pending the award of the rural grant, we could then use those funds to supplement those salaries. But if we fund those salaries directly out of Fund 10, which is the taxpayer fund, we can't offset those. That's the way I'm reading it. That's the way Mr. Belt is reading it. Mr. Wood has sat in on a couple of meetings that we've had. I think his interpretation is the same, that I am 99% confident that the funding is out there. It's just a matter of the timing of when we would receive it. And it's also important to note that one of them is for county attorney, one of them is for district attorney, and then one is county law enforcement. And it's got some stipulations that go along with it as well. You will see when we get to it, and I'm trying to be concise, but you'll see when we get to the Sheriff's Department budget request that you read through there, he's asked for some salary increases. If we give those salary increases out of the general fund right now, then we would not be eligible to utilize that grant fund to offset those salary increases in January. So there's some contingencies there. And just because that window for grant application opens up in January doesn't mean that on January 1st, we're going to get a check. You know, I mean, that's the trying to be concise. That's the nutshell of some of the planning that we're looking at doing in how best we can capitalize and take advantage of those grant funds.
So we'll probably have deeper conversation, as Mr. Belt and Mr. Boyd, come in, we talk about it. Worst case scenario, right? Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario is not funded until October of 2024.
Okay. Right? Worst case.
Yeah. I mean, you know the way our state government works sometimes, right? They say January. Oh, they could go through all this rigmarole and say, well, we're not going to let you do it until. So I think we need to look at Fund 74, make sure.
We are looking at that to see if that fund can cash carry the prosecutors through the entire fiscal year.
Yeah, I think we'd have to, because I don't trust that bill is going to sweep through and quickly have it. I had a representative here that might help us. That's my worry. Everything I've read opposing views of, yep. But I don't trust that money is going to come to it really fast.
They don't have an issue with not following through.
But yeah. It's
at least the state is better than the federal government. Yeah. The federal government will make promises and then not come through. So at least the state is a little better. But yeah, good. So you guys have had that. Being able to sustain it through
that is budget year. That is what we're going to look at hard. I mean, so, yeah. So some of it, may be that we have to fund a portion of it out of Fund 10 mm-hmm. to meet that, but as much as we can utilize the fee funds to offset those costs, then we would be able to when the grant came to fruition, we would be able to pull back the fee funds and supplement their those salaries then with the grant funding.
So again, worst case scenario is $550,000. If those increases are that total, I don't know. I've done all the. Is it, you know, the 75 to 275 is $550,000. So that would be our target number.
Not quite.
Okay.
Because the salaries that we already have, you know, we can't reduce those.
Gotcha.
So it is
the
whatever we're augmenting with any fee funds would then be able to. We would be able to use that grant to then offset those.
So I'm using this time to ask questions because we don't have a heavy agenda today.
No, yeah, no. So
in this prosecutor pay schedule, I see, you know, ADA 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and ACA 1 and 2. And you said this is for both county and district attorney's office.
ADA, that is the district attorney. ACA is the county attorney.
Okay. And so they, so ADA has five prosecutors and, okay, and the county attorney has two.
Correct.
Oh, okay. So then if I'm interpreting that correctly, then our call it a liability is $138,400 that we could.
That is the number that we're looking for.
Okay.
Because then when we get to those grants aren't just for
salary, right?
Those salaries.
Yeah.
You know, they're also you know, like our crimes victims employees, they're operating under grants right now. And we kind of pay them based off the grant amount, and really haven't increased that in a number of years. This funding allows for that as well. And then it also allows for, the funding of, you know, of equipment, I think even up to, vehicles. So there are some things that can be done under that grant, you know, even outside the scope of just salaries.
Right. Okay. All of it, and we have 412,000 for others qualifying events.
Yes. And
but if we don't commit to any of that out of Fund 74, we wait until we get the money and then we can allocate those.
Yeah.
412,000 as we see fit, the crime victims and other things in both models. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect.
And
I'm good.
I don't know. I don't, and I didn't bring my budget book because there's a question that was asked. I'm not sure if Mr. Boyd currently has five prosecutors or he currently has four. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
He intends on asking for a new prosecutor. And Mr. Wood and I, we've met with him and he is willing to wait, push that further into the budget year so that once the grant is awarded, that particular salary could be covered completely by the grant.
And I have, yes, I have not read SB 22. I've read little,
yeah,
the cliff notes or the SB 22 for dummies.
Yes.
Does it go further into the longevity of this grant?
It does not have an end date. I don't know. I do know it's for 2 years. I mean, because the state's budget is for a biennium, so they have programmed at least 2 years of funding.
You're right. Yeah. So it is. Okay. All right. Yeah. So any commitments we make, we just would have to look forward 2 years and go, oh, what happens?
The state's done that on teacher salaries. When they give every teacher in the state $800 pay raise, and it lasted 2 years on grant. It's 2 years. Well, the third year rolled around, it's like, school district, I got to pick up that $800 person. We're not going to pay it no more.
Right.
And you can't take it away from them. So it's part of their property for the salary.
So, I mean, there is some.
Right. That's the long term look. Not overcommitting.
I need to get one of those budget books. I don't have one.
Oh, one of these?
Yeah.
Yeah, last year's.
Okay. We can.
Because I borrowed Karen's last. Yeah.
You can't be.
No, she told me to take it back.
We
vicious sometimes when you take something and they tell you to make
it. Oh, you keep it.
Yeah, and you just got to look.
All the time. You're right. I was trying to be nice because you were sitting right here behind me. No doubt I would just said it like I wanted
to. So, anyway, there's the future impacts of Senate Bill 22 will come into play with some of the decisions on how we set the budget up. And I think it's pretty impressive that the state would commit that to the rules. And just so you know that it's only counties with a population of 300,000 or less are the only counties that are eligible for those funding mechanisms. Commissioner, I appreciate your optimism on our growth rate, but I think we're still just a couple years away from hitting 300,000. I think we got to hit 100,000 first, but. Okay, so and again, I didn't mean to get too far off, but I wanted to, as we were talking about this particular salary piece, to give you an idea of what we've already discussed with county attorney and the district attorney, and I believe they were in agreement that they could work within those parameters, so that then we can pick up that funding under grants.
So in 2 years, when they don't fund it, we'll have 2 years to work on budget to absorb it down the road, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's what we better plan on.
Yeah.
Right. Pick up cans on the side of the road.
Yeah.
That, do something.
You know, it does.
I'm selling rock. We got plenty of that.
I did visit with one of the constables, and they do have a new training that is mandated by the state. I don't know the cost of it yet, but it's alert training, something they did years ago. It's got to do with the bill of putting the police officers or armed people in the schools, and alert is. That's basically what it is. But so they're training all of the constables. Well, every police officer is going to have to do it. So their training is going to age up just a little bit. And then one of the constables has seen his budget in, but I don't know.
Oh, and
yeah. So I got it.
Yes, because Constable Beveridge, by the way, has said.
Well, I was going to say, some of y'all have his. Others of us don't have his. And again, I was not trying to slight them. I just, because I don't interact with them as often, I just didn't have them built into my email list. But that was my fault. It's not anything that they did or did not do correctly. And I will say that under that Senate Bill 22, there are some provisions for allocating some of that grant funding to the constables. I think it's it maxes out maybe I think at $25,000 per constable. But again,
$25,000 per call.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's I think that's a bigger part, or that's a part of that bigger $500,000.
Right.
That's countywide.
That is the county. The rural prosecutor grant, the way that verbiage is written is that it talks specifically about those offices may apply for that grant. The rural law enforcement says that the county may apply for that grant. So, okay. All right, then next in the book is AgriLife, the extension office. They had, I did not put it in your book, but they also emailed out some job description stuff. And I can provide that to you, but just as far as getting the budget book together, I didn't print all of that out at this point. But I'll make sure that you get that because I do believe that they are proposing an assistant out there. The treasurer's office has a one pager that. I've provided you. What I did not put in here, and I'll make copies of it. I got it yesterday afternoon. We do have a new price proposal for our health insurance, and it's they're proposing about a 9% increase in our premiums. So we'll certainly need to. Address that. Following the treasurer is juvenile probation, and again the bottom amount of $315,253.48. That is a programmed amount that matches state funding requirements. In essence, I think it is about, I don't know, I'm not going to tell you, but the state contributes significantly more to our juvenile probation department than what we contribute. But it is a formula based, and that number has been that number since before I was in office. And Ms. Donahue is going to. She's allocated some time to come present you some information on our budget, and she can talk more about those pieces because there is she manages with the auditor what funds are expensed out of the county funds versus the state funds, and there's actually times where she's looking for ways to spend the county money to get more state money, or she's looking to spend more state money to validate the amount that she is getting from the state. So it's kind of a shell game. So I don't get in the weeds of what she presents because she and Ms. Jones before her, they've done a really good job of managing that because there was, at least for as long as I know, I'm aware of, there's always been an excess balance in her budget at the end of the fiscal year. So they're doing, I think, their due diligence for the taxpayers. Following juvenile probation, you will see the Sheriff's Department budget request. and they put some notes in there that referenced Senate Bill 22. So that's why I wanted to make you aware of some strategies in this. And then they have provided some comparative analysis, I think, or some data on salary comparisons.
Well, this is the second. So as a consequence, they referenced a under Senate Bill number 2. So does it have a pay scale list? Because they're referencing a minimum of 45,000.
Senate Bill 22 stipulates that there must be a minimum salary of 45,000 for deputies and a minimum salary of 75,000 for the sheriff. So if we, this is what I'm saying about the
right.
If we increase that at this point,
yeah,
we don't get to use any of that Senate bill funding to meet that threshold. If we receive that grant, we can use those grant funds to meet that minimum threshold.
And or we don't have to accept.
Are we? Yes.
Everybody's going to read my name.
Yeah, it's like you're right.
Perfect. Yeah.
Okay. And then they've requested some radios and some other things. I'm not going to get into the weeds of all of that. What I have not seen from them is a jail budget. I don't know if Mr. Wood, have you seen anything from them from a jail standpoint?
No, sir, haven't.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I didn't miss anything on that. And we're going to have to take a look at some of those costs based off of projected occupation, occupying the new 47 beds at some point, and how that will affect our out of county inmate housing. Following the sheriff's information, you've got indigent defense and pretrial services that he has submitted. And I believe Mr. Ament is also on the schedule to come talk to the court. And then the district clerk. And I have spoken with Ms. Newton from the county clerk's office. She was not requesting anything other than the previous clerk step raises that we have kind of adopted. But she did want to ensure that she was funded out of her records management funds to continue with the co-file. Because I always want to say co-logic with the co-file contract. But again, that's out of her fee funds for record management. And that is everything that I have received to be able to provide you.
Well, I think her, but Lisa putting this together.
It's
nice to have it in a binder. Mm-hmm.
Judge, I've got the 52nd and the 440th. Not very many changes there. Probably do need to increase the jurors on that though.
Yeah.
Juror payment for that $50.
Okay.
First day.
Right.
60 each and second day.
Okay.
There she pops you.
Oh. Some of this does tie back in the pigeon free trial.
Yeah.
I will tell you from emergency management, I'll get that finished up today and get that out to y'all. I'm going to tie, it's my intent to entice some incentive pays into that for potentially floodplain management, as well as now for the other one slips my mind, but I think we can we've got the potential to take advantage of that position to help us with some other areas that we're looking for contracted services for, as opposed to just funding a whole new position for that. But I think I can do that pretty much within the framework of what that budget amount is currently. And so that's all I've got for items that have been turned into us. Questions, comments, concerns?
One of the things I want to discuss with y'all is that, we have taken on a new custodian, and she is now putting the DA's office, the 440th, the tax office, the county attorney's office, the juvenile probation, JP's office, and this office. And she has presented budget here. But I think that it needs some work. And if y'all give me some indulgence to work on that, I will share that with y'all. I know kind of this is some new charted territory that we're working with, but I will get something back to y'all as soon as can.
Yeah, I'm working on Ty a little bit on.
Yeah,
I have field the roots and some.
Yeah.
Some things that are coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. That, we've got several things like the domes in the courthouse are leaking. One of the things me and Judge Miller had discussed, and I'd like sometime to take y'all all down there and look at it, because it's bothersome. The basement down there, guys, in the courthouse, you can literally take your finger and take the mortar and just do that. It comes out. Now, there's some places that has gaps that deep in the rock that we're going to have to replace that down there and look at that issue. And there's some other things that we need to discuss, but.
Wasn't that mortar one of them, wasn't it?
The mortar is concerning.
Very concerning. I'd like to take y'all all down there and see that. It's
that's
turning the second again. Yeah. So we'll need to, and also, we'll have to reach out to the historical society to get some, my opinion, because we are at courthouse the historical side of it, get some feedback from them as well, how to approach that. But that's some of the things that we need to address on maintenance side that we need to do.
We have a local vendor that went down in the basement with Commissioner Basham and I several months ago. And, he just right off the bat gave us a couple of suggestions and recommendations on preventing water intrusion from the outside coming in, and they were quick fixes. They were able to.
We got those took care of.
I believe that he can work with us. He can help us develop that scope of work to be able to seal up those mortar gaps as a long term fix and still be in compliance with the state's guidelines on what we can do there.
And of course, the big one that everybody knows is chillers. We're in process having that handled. But on good news, instead of having 22 buildings right now, we're down to 19. I would be not all buildings.
One at a time. The destruction team over here.
I had somebody say something about that to me the other night.
Yes, of course.
Of course, they blame me and you. But he's like, man, y'all two get on the court and y'all just tearing all kinds of crap down. Some of it needed to go years ago.
said, sometimes it's not a bad thing to tear stuff down.
Okay. Anything else covering kind of the budget stuff? Look what the cat drug in. His timing was impeccable. Because now I'd like to move over to item number B, which is the discussion concerning the scope of work and process for the Resilient Communities Program grant. As you recall, this is a grant that we've applied, we applied for to help with the adoption of building codes. Specifically, they had originally said, you know, zoning, we can't zone, but they the GLO did modify that program to allow us to then update our subdivision regulations. And then I believe the verbiage in the program says to develop a land use plan. And we had to get a little bit of clarification, but I do believe that at this point that, you know, a land use plan, that phrase is synonymous with a master plan or a, Mr. Bell, help me out, comprehensive plan. And it will address, what areas of the county meet the best needs for land use. Now, not that we can zone them that way, but we can promote them as these are the best areas if you want to do something industrial, commercial, manufacturing kind of something. We can tie that to roadways. These are the best areas for, you know, your agricultural development. These are the best areas for rural housing development. It should lay that out for us, and that's a way for a tool for us to be able to promote, Coryell County as a whole from a development standpoint. And most notably, I would like to see that this plan really focus on what our transportation network looks like. Not just from a state and federal highway standpoint, but our county roads, and most notably to get road classifications. And I think that is a stepping stone. You heard a couple of our citizens mention it, and we've talked about it briefly before. There is the ability for the county to collect impact fees when there is development going on, but we have to have other steps, other things in place before we can adopt a program to collect those impact fees. And one of those is having the roads classified, because a trigger for collecting impact fees is if there's a development that goes in that changes the classification of that road, then we would be able to collect fees to accommodate the improvements needed on that road because of a change in classification. Does that make sense? Like it goes from maybe a collector road, a minor collector road.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Do we have any other? Has anybody? I haven't looked at other counties to see if they have like a grid of classifications, because I have no clue what that really means.
It is defining what the primary use of that road is.
The main artery.
And typically it's based off of usage. So if with a subdivision going in, they're putting in their no roads, those internal roads would be residential roads. But then they funnel into a county road. Well, that county.
Well, like the one over there in y'all that we had all that trouble with. That county road, was it 279?
267?
267, 272, 274. Those would fall into the category where, as of before this development come in, they were just traveling roads.
And now that development comes in, it's a collector road going to 84. So that would have to be a, we could have got a fee widened.
So there is a, there's a terminology. So
there is some standard terminology. Okay. Yes.
And all this goes under just that one, the RCP that we're awarded, the planning grant.
So yes, $300,000 we were awarded.
Yes, sir.
Planning grant for the resilient communities program.
Yes, sir.
And so it's to build resiliency in the community for the future. And the $300,000 is broke down between building codes and a land use plan. Part of the land use plan is the zoning ordinances, is what they call them, because that's their term under their grant document. But under that would be our subdivision regulations, floodplain ordinances, all of those things would fall under what they call zoning ordinances. The building code would be things like, one of the things the commissioner's court's authorized to do is to put a building setback line on county roads. We haven't done that in the past, but we could. There are some other things that fall under, the building codes terminology. So the way the budget's broken out is $20,000 has been set aside for building codes through this program. And they've been working with us for months now, identifying kind of what this is, a brand new program. They had a committee that was kind of fleshing out the rules as they went. And based on our response, on our participation, sending them all of the things that we wanted to consider, needed to consider, and kind of the process for counties. It's, they're like a lot of folks, they think about cities, about municipalities, about zoning ordinances and things of that nature. The deal with counties, especially counties our size, is a different ballgame. We don't have all that authority, zoning authority like the municipality has. So the other $280,000 has been broke out, and this is our proposed budget. So this is, and they have accepted this. And so this is kind of what we would be looking at. We could move some stuff around, obviously, but this is kind of our proposal. Of $20,000 set for building codes, $10,000 would be set for assessment of current plans. And that would be, we don't have a current plan, but there are agencies in our area that have plans. So that would be completed by a vendor, and that would be the review of the state agency and municipal plans that are available in our area to see how our plan would interact with them and see what we could glean from them and be helpful in the development of our plan. Identification of local hazards, that would be completed by a vendor. There's been $20,000 budgeted for that item. So identification of hazards in the community that can be addressed with the development of codes, ordinances, regulations, and plans. For example, like the judge said, identifying roadways that possibly need to be upgraded because of the nature of the thoroughfare changing over time because of development. Cactus Lane, for example, let's just throw it out there. Lutheran Church Road, Duncan Road, for example. Duncan's a good one. It has changed since I've been here. It has changed from a trail to get from one cow pasture to another to a thoroughfare.
My question, like, we install that and say down the road, say about 4 or 5 years, there's a subdivision that goes in on county road that we didn't. Can you go back and get more money down the road for that? Or is that
through those impact fees? Yes.
Okay.
Not, I mean, this is a planning grant here.
Okay.
And then later on, if there are hazards and upgrading that we identify that needs to be done, there will be other opportunities for funding through some of these other programs, and they're voluminous and I don't know them all. So the participatory process, we budgeted $30,000 for in-house. That would be the value that we provided for the meetings for the hazard land use program and the various regulations, gathering county community input and review of this, these things as we go through them, whether it be subdivision regulations, floodplain ordinances, building codes, building setback lines, those kind of things. We're going to have meetings, public meetings, things of that nature that we're all going to participate in. We have budgeted $30,000 for that participatory process, and we're going to do that in-house. That would be our value. Development of land use plan, budget $137,000 to be completed by a vendor. Obviously, that's not a round number. That's what I came up with after I signed value. Some of these other things, $137,000. We think that that can be completed by a vendor for around the $100,000 range, but we have not gone through a formal cost estimate procedure. But we're going to learn how to do that. So, more to come on that. Adoption of the comprehensive plan. So these work items are their work items that they listed, and we assigned values, and I put an explanation out on the side of them what I proposed was going to be included in that. Sent that to them. They reviewed it, and they have approved it. So the adoption of the comprehensive plan, $20,000 was budgeted in-house. It's to be completed in-house. Public meetings to review and formally adopt things. So we're going to have a participatory process. We're going to have meetings to develop things. And we're going to have an adoption process where these things are formally adopted. We amend our subdivision regulations. We've got to be a notice posted in the paper. We're going to amend our floodplain ordinance. We've got to notify FEMA. We have things that we have to do formally to adopt and amend those things. So that's in the adoption part of the plan that we have budgeted. Adoption of the comprehensive plan, $20,000 in-house. Adoption of the zoning ordinance, $20,000 in-house. That would be attorney review, coordination of road and bridge, on-site sewage facility, designated representative, floodplain administrator, et cetera, to adopt those zoning ordinances, which are subdivision regulations. Our on-site sewage facility order, which we need to amend, put some things in place for multi-family dwellings and some things of that nature. One of the other things that we can consider in this, being multi-family dwellings, is fire code, county fire code. Right now, you build a duplex inside the city limits, you got to have firewall in between two living areas. You go one out in the county, and it does not exist. We don't have a building code in the county. We don't have a fire code in the county. Probably something that I would think the court would want to entertain. I know they're building some, they got some fourplexes out in the county, serviced by an on-site sewage building. I don't know if they got firewalls in 20 living areas or not.
Those fourplexes in the city, you got a sprinkler system if you go over to Duke Day.
So those are things that, we need to consider, get community input on, make decisions, things of that nature. So that's in-house. So there's, $30,000, $50,000, $70,000 of the $300,000 we have budgeted in-house for that portion. There's also, they agreed through some negotiations and talks to basically 11% for grant administration fees. And so that's been set aside to be performed in-house, the amount of the grant, the $300,000 grant. They've agreed to allow us to draw down 11% of that, $33,000 for grant administration fees. So that's also budgeted to be performed in-house, not by a grant administration vendor. And so that totals $280,000 plus the 20 for building codes. That's total of $300,000 per year. So what we need to, as far as going out for an RFP for a vendor, a few things that we need to consider, probably on our budget breakdown, one line item is development of land use plan, and the next item is adoption of comprehensive plan. I guess those, so obviously, they're just interchangeable. That just means the same. Land use plan, comprehensive plan, just interchangeable terms. And there are some folks, I've actually visited with some vendors that have experience performing these tasks, drafting these things. And I think that putting an RFP out for a vendor to develop a land use plan / comprehensive plan is one item. And then I think there's some thought to be put into how we want to go about securing the services of folks to help us develop these other things. We need to development. We need to work on our floodplain ordinance. It was passed. Can't remember when. It's been a long time ago. And our current floodplain ordinance does not allow for any residential construction in the floodplain, period. And that is very much out of the norm. The norm is you have to raise the first level of residential structure so many feet above. You have to feel, you have to show, you know, that there's, you know, right now, construction, no residential construction is allowed. But if you build something, you got to show zero rise. No effect, but zero rise, period. That's not the norm either. And so there are things out there that we need to visit about and see what y'all want to do, how y'all want to handle those situations. And it's not a legal matter. There's options out there. It's dealt with differently in different communities. There's different requirements, and which, you know, makes sense. I mean, some communities are much more prone to flood than we are. And a lot of communities, the floodplain has been investigated a lot more than ours has. There's a lot more base flood elevations, a lot more detailed studies in a lot of communities than there is ours, especially outside of the city limits. You won't find hardly any studied areas outside the city limits in Royal County. And so, for example, like Greenbrier addition up there, the Garnet Grant put in on the 84 on Greenbrier Creek. Well, those houses that are built there are right on the edge of the floodplain. And some of them, we did allow them to put their homestead sewage facility in the floodplain because it's allowed. And but they had to have an engineer, you know, make sure it was designed not to float, you know, engineered not to float. Well, if there's enough water stands yep. there long enough to worry about an on-site sewage facility floating, we got lots of problems. You know, I mean, really, if that creek gets up, it runs down. So it's not, you know, something that's going to stand in water for like California right now. They got water standing out there. They claim it's going to be 2 years before it goes down. You know, it's got whole yards underwater, like trucking yards, like real, like just people's yards, like equipment yards and stuff. So what? Sanitary water. Don't get that for a while, and stuff. But we don't have those kind of issues here. So our floodplain one is probably needs addressed. You know, I'm certainly not capable of laying all of those options out and discussing them intelligently. Y'all, we need somebody that's versed in that knows how that stuff works. Knows what the options are and how to develop a plan with the appropriate forms to be submitted for application and review and approval to comply with all of those federal floodplain regulations and such. I don't know that we get a vendor that's able to help us with that and the International Fire Company and the subdivision regulations. I'm thinking, you know, the person that's the best to, there may be someone that's capable of addressing floodplain ordinance and those sewage facility order and subdivision regulations appropriately. I don't know. I would think that, you know, floodplain ordinance would be a more specialized deal, and then, you know, the building ordinances and zoning type stuff and subdivision regulations and such. I don't know who, I don't know how y'all want to go about tackling that issue. Acquiring a vendor for each of those things. We could do like we did for the engineers, you know, just put out an RFP, put out an RFQ for professional services, probably gonna be a professional, and just lay all of it out, what we need, three or four different things, and just take applications and just put in our RFQ. We're gonna award multiple contracts under this document, you know, and see, and get somebody that's with a big firm that's got somebody that can handle each one of the things, fine. If we don't, we get somebody that's really, really good on floodplain and somebody that's capable of handling the rest of it, then we need to do two contracts, or if there's three that come in that we want to deal with. And I don't know how else to do it. That's right. I need a little direction from y'all before I drive something up and break the y'all for consideration. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason I suggest that some of your folks talk about it.
From my standpoint, I think we need to, much like you said, we need to identify some specific things within those services that we're needing. Ultimately, I mean, I think it all ties back to our subdivision regulation, or is going to tie into it. I think it would be, again, this is my opinion. My opinion is that we issue, you know, an RFQ listing those items and seek respondents with the understanding that we may issue multiple contracts or may award multiple contracts. Because it very well could be that there's a firm out there that's, you know, so big and so well versed and has the assets that they could provide us one-stop shopping. I mean, until we ask, or until we put the information out there, we won't know. But I think it is important that we, you know, very clearly identify what are the specific tasks that we're asking for their qualifications on.
Is there a time limit on the expenditure of this?
We haven't received the contract yet.
Okay. That's good. Fair enough.
They've sent the last email I received from them. I think this week we should see a draft contract, and it should have all those terms in it. And so I don't.
Okay.
Ms. Reed from NRS is on here, and they were involved with the application. Lillian, do you happen to know, is there an end date or a timeline for the expenditure of those funds for the RCP?
I am not entirely sure, but that's something that I can definitely find out. Like Brandon said, it'll probably be covered in the contract. So yes, still just waiting to receive that.
Okay, thank you.
Just the reason I asked is, these things, each one of these are not only important, but they're long lasting, as we see. Our floodplain, Brandon can't even remember when it was done. So, you know, when we do it, I think we just need to dedicate enough time to each one of those categories that we make. And I don't want to feel like we're under pressure of, we got to spend that money in 6 months, which I don't think it's going to be. Based upon his input and your recap, I think the RFQ is the way to go. It gives us a little more latitude to really pick off a menu, if you will, and vet those people and get the right person. I just think an RFP would be very difficult to break it up too much. But that's why I'm all for an RFQ, Mr. Bell.
I am. So this is so the building codes, it looks like the option must be completed in 12 months of contract execution.
Okay.
They sent me an email back in March that had some of the, let's see what this other one says. That was on the building codes. Adoption of approved land use plan and zoning ordinances must be completed within 18 months of contract execution.
All right.
So
we got to go for the zoning, got to go for the 12 month. That's kind of what I was saying is we look at that and go, okay, we got to focus on this one first, secure that person. And just make sure we, this court, I think, really diligently worked on the subdivision rules. And as we saw, there's a lot of holes that can be poked in it.
Yeah,
sure. It's a volume.
There's a lot of volumes to that thing.
Yes, it looks like we'll have 12 to 18, 12 months on the building codes, 18 months on the land use plans and the zoning. And the zoning is where the, under the zoning ordinance is where the subdivision regulations, floodplain ordinance, on-site sewage facility order, all that is under that. Building codes is strictly going to be our discussion about those, the adoption of those building setback lines and those international fire codes. And so that's specifically listed under the building code section is the international residential code. So if we choose to adopt after our investigation and process into the community under building codes, it's things that would fall under like that international residential code. So it would be like your fire code, your building setback, things of that nature. And this is the, this is the first time they've ever done this. That's the reason it's kind of, we've had a lot of questions. Because although I don't know all the answers, I do know a lot of
them. No, I mean, I've got, although I think we all have questions, I mean, because one of them even becomes, and I don't know how all the pieces of the puzzle fit together, but, and again, I'll go back to the analogy of, a subdivision going in and those streets are, residential, but it connects to a county road. I personally would like us to be able to assess or analyze, a setback on, in a residential, quote unquote, residential area. Building setback may not be as much as, somebody who's building on the county road, because I think there's, some safety concerns that line of sight and, am I making sense? I can picture it in my head, and I'm not sure I'm saying it the right way, but.
A subdivision versus just a single property owner building on them.
Yes.
Line of sight, a lot of stuff.
Emergency access.
Yeah.
Because do you want
the other things that I don't know if this county has ever, discussed as any kind of an evacuation plan. We kind of saw the semi confusion during the Crittenberg. Which way do we go? obviously fire is going to be our number one reason for evacuating residents. I don't think we have any.
So the Next General Land Office put out an application guide for this RCP program, and part of it has kind of the draws that could be made during the execution of the production of this land use plan, and it kind of breaks it down, as far as base study and community involvement, public meetings, and then the land use plan, map, the graphic and written presentation of desirable and feasible alternative land use patterns of the community. Map should be clear and for the streets, lots, and block lines, all land uses must be included. And then, resiliency measures must include a description of how hazard mitigation strategies and actions were incorporated into the land use plan. So a review of our hazard mitigation plan is required for the production of this document, because it must take that into account and when necessary, show hazards and plans for dealing with them, like you said, evacuation maybe. And it also, in the implementation strategy that must be developed after those things are identified, it's the steps that will be taken to enforce the provisions of the plan. So what are we going to do to upgrade these things? What are we going to do to make sure that things are built and done in accordance with our plan for the future what are we going to put in place to, you know, to execute? And this would be 64 pages for as long as eight pages of it, really. The last couple of pages of it have a chart kind of showing the things that should be addressed and kind of the order to address them in as far as the flood damage prevention order, comprehensive plan, land use plan, and their zoning ordinances to meet the needs of the plan, and then your document your outreach and community involvement at each step of the way. That's what we'll be using to, you know, kind of as our roadmap as we work through this with our vendor on the land use plan production and our vendor or vendors on the developing those other documents.
Well, and again, you know, there may be, you know, organizations out there that are well-versed in all of these things that we're, you know, we're asking for, we're looking for. But so it may be one, it may be two, maybe five.
Yep.
But I think it's a matter of, not to beat the dead horse, but to clearly identify those areas that, you know, we're looking to have addressed and then see what kind of responses we get based off of that. I mean, I would hope that we're not five vendors deep into some of this, because then that's, you know, invoicing and contract management, and that could be,
and coordination between the two vendors if some of them cross over.
Yes,
that's the biggest.
Got forward y'all that email. It's got those draw, the proposed draw schedules.
Thank you.
Some of that's been fleshed out a little since March, with the, you know, a few of the questions that we've asked and got answers to. But as a general rule, that's what works on their website, is their proposed program.
Mr. Bell, have we given you enough information to kind of move forward with the drafting of a RFQ?
So I think what I hear is you want me to draft an RFQ that's got all of the things in it that we need to address except for the development of land use plan. And put the same stuff we put in there, like our engineer, the other one, we're on multiple contracts under that amount. Mm-hmm. And then an RFP on the production of a land use plan and adoption of comprehensive plan. So I haven't found one yet, but thinking that the vendor that developing the land use plan will be adopted as a comprehensive plan for the county, and it's got to take into account our hazard mitigation plan and any current plans that exist in our area, is going to have to have some visibility on our production or these other things, because they must be produced in such a way as to accomplish the tasks or goals, or whatever you want to call them, of our land use comprehensive plan. I'm not sure exactly how to word that, but maybe I'm a friend and get a little help in that regard.
Well, okay, then looking at it, you know, trying to have a logical flow to it, if we issued an RFP for the land use plan, and identifying again all of the key tasks that are going to have to be incorporated at some level into that land use plan, select that particular vendor, and then have a discussion with that vendor about how they plan on approaching meeting all of those tasks. Part of that, I think, would be in their proposal. And if they feel like they're going to need some outside information or outside, then we could do specific RFQs based off what the vendor, additional information that the vendor would need. Is that?
Well, I think you could put out the RFP, and it would just say you could include that RFQs are going out to coincide with this, and they're covering, you know what I'm saying? The way it's already identified to them that we're looking for qualifications, we're looking for experience in this, you know. In a land use study, they would already, I don't know neither, but
I've got some stuff up and I'll look at it next week. And,
all right.
Yeah.
There you go.
I got a plan. It won't take much to put together the RFQ because I've got that engineer RFQ that's a lot of, you know, it's a lot the same. You just have to put the task in there. RFP on the production of land use plan, comprehensive plan. I think there's enough direction in the GLO's deal that I pulled with y'all to draft the RFP for the production of that without much trouble. So we get those two documents prepared. Maybe between now and then we talk to some other folks and make sure we're on the right path and go from there.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay.
Crystal clear.
Uncharted territories, but they're good. Good uncharted territories. Okay. I think that pretty much wraps up what we had covered on for today's workshop. Mr. Bell, I will tell you that the court took action to initiate the development of an RFP. For the community development block grant, minus the misspelling, the grammatical error I have there on the agenda that we did not catch. I would offer the court opportunities for closing remarks. Anyone?
Before we go all the way in the cloud, and we do have one. Possible. Did you have anything, Ken?
I talked to Commissioner Weddle earlier, and we've become aware that we're required to take alert training every 2 years, and that's probably not included in our budget. And I think the precinct 3 council is working on getting some state money coming back to us. I don't know where we're going to get the money from, but at the extent, we don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
But from what I understand, the legislature passed in the last session that requirement.
We don't know what to do.
No. And it's all peace officers, if I understand it correctly. Of course, the reserves that I have are going to take care of themselves. That training is pretty expensive. We we've had that before, and even though we've had it before, they're going to make us renew it every
2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, anybody you see me,
I think it costs nearly $1,000 per officer to go. They load up. If y'all want me to explain what it is, I can kind of briefly go over it.
I'd love that. Because you call it alert training, right?
Yes. Okay. And it has to be administered through the alert providers. We can't just go anywhere we want, find a cheaper venue to go. We're stuck with them, basically. The previous training that I've had, they'll take an old school and basically take it over and tell you to go get the active shooter. And of course, they'll shoot you as you're approaching with ammunition. They'll take your gun and they'll clear everything out, put ammunition in it, and then you get in a gunfight, basically. And they have simulated school children coming out, teachers, chaos. Basically, and you've got to discern who you're going to shoot and who you're not going to shoot. And it's a learning process, so you don't shoot when it's for real, obviously. But it's an intensive training, and I don't really know how much it's going to cost, but it's going to be probably $750 to $1,000 for all.
I think back when we did it, it was in the $450-$500 range, somewhere in there.
If I remember correctly,
but I think it's going to be a lot more.
Right. And Mr. Weddle asked if I needed anything the other day, and I didn't have that information until the Precinct 3 Constable came back from training this week.
I know back when we did it, I mean, of course, we did it as an agency, and that all the guns were pretty much, your sidearms were pretty much the same, but they replaced your slide and your barrel to shoot those ammunition. So you use your same now. I don't know how they do it, all the different SOs and PDs and what they carry, but.
Oh, this thing.
I'm tired.
Needs tired.
What, you need tires?
Tires. Ted needs tires every year.
This year.
Yeah. Just need a spare this year.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Brock.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
We need rain, obviously. Myself and Commissioner Weddle sit down to our version of some of this budgeting too. We had fun.
Yeah.
I think that I did bring out the cost of beverages budget and I'm still trying to do some research on it, but I guess it's better.
The other one thing that I'll request is, yes, Mr. Matthews and I kind of sat down and went line item by line item and just want to make sure through this budgeting process, you know, when we're doing that we allocate enough time. I'm committed to work till midnight if we have to really, you know, this is a big one. You know, we got a lot of moving parts and a lot of anticipations, and so I just want to make sure that the court's ready to invest the time and not feel pressured, just like I don't want to be pressured on spending grant money, you know, just to get something done.
Pray for rain and pray for commissioners to make good decisions on this budget.
Yes, sir.
County Attorney's Office redid their budget this morning, my budget request. So, I read it again. This is like draft three. It's kind of work in progress. It's getting better than this. I'm going to be happy with this. Just saving y'all money, just right and left.
Right.
Just wait. Y'all going to be happy with my new and improved version. They worked on DA's office budget, some judge. Based on what we talked about the other day on prosecutor paying, I think we have a solution that's
not going to affect the fund deal. So
we did. I did cover. They've got copies of your the proposed salaries as, and we did talk through. The concept of how best to utilize Senate Bill 22. We've laid the groundwork for that. I would welcome your next version revision.
Obviously, we'll do about it after we're about done. If you have the time, so we're done, I'll show you my latest and greatest numbers.
Okay.
For mine, kind of work in progress plan. I'm talking to Boyd some more, talking to our people some more. I think I've got a plan.
Okay. Good. Judge, that sounds good.
That we had talked, I've been several meetings back, so we were asked about some of my concerns in this upcoming budget. One of the things that I brought up was an environmental officer.
I got with Ms. Roebuck. I'll tell you where we are with that. Is I got with Ms. Roebuck on the anticipation of how many of the red tags, the door tags.
Mm-hmm.
I believe at this point it is not cost effective to hire someone specifically for that task, which then leaves two options that I'll.
Said he'd do it. We'd make sure his training got
paid. Is
see what happens when you show up.
at this juncture, I would. I'll have a number for the court, but what I think it is in our best interest to do is give our current law enforcement people. The opportunity to sign up to serve those, and there is a fee per tag that they put out.
Like somebody dumps trash on the side of the road, so because I get phone calls, well, there's trash on the side of the road.
Yeah, that was the other. It's not not just the red tags. There's a lot of other environmental issues that we have beyond.
We don't have the trustees anymore to go pick up the trash or the tires, and I'm not saying that would be part, but just. Something we need to discuss.
You need somebody to dig through the trash and find names.
Yeah,
and
then
you can identify the tires. I mean, where they came from. There's markings on them.
Yes.
So, I agree with Mr. Basham. We need to spend a little time talking because we talked about it last year.
Yeah.
As a part of, and there was an agreement that we need somebody dedicated to that.
That one was Slim was wanting a bulletproof hoodie.
Yes. Okay. That's all we have for this morning.
Mr. Taylor, if you hesitate,
you have one thing that doesn't really pertain to the budget, but the fire hazard we have right now.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to, and I don't know, you may be in contact with Billy Layden.
He's requested.
Being as bad as we were last year.
Yeah.
Having a little worry across Port Hood, friend. I talked to Game Board on Owl Creek the other day. He's just worried to death.
Yeah.
I mean, there is belly deep.
We got some good growth this spring, and then
we're on that list too. I mean, there was a showing from KWTX or KX6B, one of them that somebody sent me the other day about the drought where we bought 150 cans.
That's my concern is if we can get to, if we need to put the merman on or.
The burn ban will be an item on the agenda for our next regular meeting. I can tell you that there is a very high probability that a burn ban will be enacted before then. I have been in talk with Mr. Vaden as well as Gary Young from Copper's Cove, who's their fire chief and emergency management over there. I was going to follow up with them today on what their calls were based off of this weekend, because that's typically where we see the most activity, is people have time to burn on the weekends. It is. And not only is it, it's hot, it's dry, and it's windy, and the wind adds another significant factor in there. Typically, you can do two out of the three, but you put the three together, and it's really a not good situation. So, okay. This week is a series of meetings. So what we will do is we will recess until tomorrow at 1:30, noting that as of this morning, we had not had anyone sign up to present any budget request materials tomorrow afternoon. So with that, we'll pick up with some of the items that we've discussed collectively about environmental, how we want to approach that, what's the consensus of the court, as well as a few other items that we have taken in the last 24 hours. So with that, we are in recess until tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon at 1:30.